And the talk is on riding the ox home, picture 6 of the 10 ox herding pictures. As we've said before, these pictures were created by a Zen master in the 12th century to help the monks understand how they were moving along their path toward awakening. So far, there have been two characters in the story, the ox and the ox herder. So far, most of us have probably identified to some degree with the ox herder. We have watched as the ox herder searched for and then discovered traces of and finally encountered the ox for the very first time. We saw the ox herder's relationship to the ox grow from being a power conflict with the ox herder at the disadvantage, holding on for dear life to the taut rope, trying to keep the ox from running off, to a relationship between a more confident ox herder leading a seemingly compliant ox. So far, there appears to be a growing mutual trust between the two, but the rope remains necessary in their relationship. With each picture, we've asked questions like, how does the picture connect to my practice? What does the ox represent for me? Am I like this ox herder in some ways, or am I different? These pictures are meant to support us in understanding the Dhamma and in understanding what it means to awaken. So, Jerry, would you put the, you have the picture. Yeah, if you'd screen share that, great. So here's the picture. And the first thing we're going to do today is just give you time to look at the picture and see what response you have to it. Listen to the verse, see what response you have to the verse. So I'm just going to be quiet for a few seconds and let you do that. Then I'll read the verse. The verse, riding home on the ox. Mounting the bull or the ox slowly, I return homeward. The voice of my flute intones through the evening, measuring with hand beats the pulsating harmony. I direct the endless rhythm. Whoever hears this melody will join me. So I have a few questions to prompt you as you're reflecting on the picture and the verse. And I can't read them because the picture is up. So I'm going to ask Jerry to take the picture down. Thank you. So I'm asking you, what is the wisdom of the picture and verse for you today? Riding the ox home. You could think about the overall feeling you get from the picture in the verse. Is there any feeling that came up for you? Or you could think about the words of the title, Riding the Ox Home, or the verse. And I'll read it one more time. Mounting the bull slowly, I return homeward. The voice of my flute intones through the evening, measuring with hand beats the pulsating harmony. I direct the endless rhythm. Whoever hears this melody will join me. You might notice an element of the picture that strikes you, interests you, you're curious about. And the verse or the picture might recall an experience you've had or an aspiration you have. You might have a question in your mind when you see this picture or when you hear the verse. So those are just some possible responses. I'm going to share, and you're going to have time during the breakout groups after I do the talk to discuss your response to the picture today. And I'm going to share some of my reflections and what some of us in the planning for this month of working with the Oxford Ink Picture 6, what we said in our planning period. So I'm going to answer the questions and share my response first. And so my overall feeling that I take out of this picture is relaxation, contentment, faith, no hurry, the opposite of impatience. And I think of my sister every time we used to go traveling on camping trips. When will we get there? When will we get there? When will we get there? But that does not seem what's going on, like what's going on in this picture. And then the word that really jumped out at me was home. This is the first time that word has been mentioned in the Oxford Ink Pictures. And environment has been, you know, a variety of environments, and some of them pretty challenging, deep ravines and high plateaus and, you know, not very homey at all. So that brought up the question for me, where is my home? What is home? And the picture elements, I noticed the ox herder is relaxed on top of the ox. And this is also a first, not leading or constraining the ox in any way. It reminds me of a line from a book, Platero and I, by Juan Ramon Jimenez, who some of you may know as a poet. And he took a walking trip around Spain, I believe, with his donkey, Platero. And he said, I go where he goes, and he takes me where I want to go. So to me, that is kind of the idea I see here in this picture of the ox herder relaxing, playing his flute on top of the ox. But then I also had an association with the snake charmer. And I thought, well, maybe the ox herder is still training the ox, but not with the whip and rope, because we don't have the whip and rope anymore. The verse says, measuring with hand beats the pulsating harmony, I direct the endless rhythm. And when I look at the picture, it doesn't seem like the ox herder is directing anything. It doesn't seem like he's directing the ox. So I thought, well, maybe the ox herder has gained some kind of intuitive wisdom at this point, and is more in touch with the present moment inwardly in his or in her heart, and also outwardly with conditions as they are arising in the moment and passing away. So more in touch with the source of creation and more sensitive, with some insight or the ability to gain insight that helps the ox herder respond creatively in the moment rather than with old habits of mind in guiding the ox. So it's still a directing, but it's a different kind of directing. It's more an intuitive kind of directing based on understanding. So anyway, this is just a thought I had. So instead of planning and having specifically practiced techniques, the ox herder is connected to a different source of guidance for the ox or the mind, as we have frequently felt the ox was symbolizing. So the wise understanding and opening of the heart enable the ox herder to move with harmony and faith in the ways of the ox. This is just my speculation. And it reminds me of words from the poem I read last month by Roger Keyes, where in the poem he says, don't be afraid, love, feel, let life take you by the hand. let life live through you. And somehow the playing of the flute seems to be an expression of life living through you. Back in February, Tim, our guiding teacher, said that we could frame the pictures by grouping them into four sections. The first being the search, the second being the struggle for mastery, the third letting go, and the fourth integration. And I think this picture speaks to the letting go phase. The problem we talked about in our planning meeting when we teachers got together to talk about picture six is that we're getting to a point in the 10 pictures where they can challenge our own knowledge through our own direct experience. The pictures express the evolution of consciousness according to our founding teacher, Rodney Smith. And Eckhart Tolle says, ultimately, you, meaning we, are not a person, but a focal point where the universe is becoming conscious of itself. Now, I can reflect on that idea and think, you know, I think that might be true, but I don't have knowledge of it from my direct experience. So what do we do here with these pictures as we get into picture 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 towards awakening? I think the 10 ox herding pictures can give us a sense of where we're going, even if we haven't completely gotten there yet. They can help us understand what qualities must be established to enable the next phase. It's a bit like dependent arising and transcendental dependent arising that we studied in 2020. The Buddha said, with respect to dependent arising and transcendent arising, there is a supporting condition without which the next does not arise. So I think in a way these pictures are showing us that if we go back to the four groups that Tim noted, we could say that integration will not arise unless there is a letting go. Letting go will not arise unless there is a struggle for mastery. A struggle for mastery will not arise unless there is a search. Even when the conditions for making, say, picture six, riding the ox home, even if those conditions are possible, make that that stage possible, in our life of practice on the Eightfold Path, we still continue with mindfulness, wise mindfulness, wise effort, wise concentration. The Buddha said, and what, monks, is right mindfulness? It is the only way that leads to nibbana, and we're not at nibbana yet. So right mindfulness takes wise effort, and wise effort involves the four great endeavors, which are preventing the arising of unarisen, unwholesome states, like the hindrances, desire, aversion, sloth and torpor, restlessness, doubt, as well as papancha and other thoughts and actions motivated by the three poisons of greed, hatred, and delusion. These are unwholesome states, and the ox herder and us work to prevent the arising of these unwholesome states. Once they've arisen, we work also to abandon the already arisen unwholesome states. And I was interested to read in Bhikkhu Bodhi's book on the Eightfold Path, or was it the Four Foundations? I think it's the Four Foundations. That the Buddha has a whole series of ways to antidotes to the defilements. For example, he's suggests substituting an unwholesome thought with its exact opposite, like offer metta to a difficult person, or meditate on impermanence as an antidote to desire. So I think those are just, I just wanted to mention that sometimes we want to just get some really practical techniques about how to deal with abandoning the unwholesome. But also the second of the four, the third of the four is arousing wholesome states not yet present, like the seven factors of awakening, the Brahma Viharas, and the five spiritual faculties. So these are very positive and wholesome qualities that can help us. Also, once we have aroused those wholesome states, we maintain and perfect them. And this all takes wise effort. In other words, we can fall off the ox, but I think this sixth picture invites us to look for the value of the wholesome states in our life. The ox herder is doing more than preventing the arising of the hindrances and the distortions of reality caused by greed, hatred, and delusion. He or she is doing more than abandoning those unwholesome states that have arisen. And even though both of these efforts take a lot of reflection, investigation, and understanding, simultaneously the ox herder cultivates what is wholesome. Sometimes I think we can discount or overlook the seeds of wholesomeness in our lives. Ajahn Suchito talks about meditation allies, and that each of us has learned to get in touch with what nourishes us, gives us strength, confidence, and faith in our movement toward liberation. In this sixth picture of the Riding the Ox Home, there's a lot of wholesomeness expressed. There's harmony, faith, calm, the homeward direction, the opening to creative expression, beauty and joy, as well as the promise of oneness with others. The last line, whoever hears this melody will join me. And it suggests that we are to understand that we are going toward a place of connection and belonging. Home is where the heart is. T.S. Eliot says, we shall not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time. This is a safe place. It's okay to let go. I think that is expressed in this picture. And we understand that the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes of love, kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity, are there to hold us in times of struggle. The seven factors of awakening can take root here too. Mindfulness, discernment, persistence, rapture not of the flesh, serenity, concentration, because the mind of one who is at ease, as the ox herder appears to be in this picture, becomes concentrated, and the mind that is concentrated can be overseen with equanimity. When I was at a retreat at Cloud Mountain a number of years ago, I saw this quote taped over the kitchen sink, and I copied it down and took it home. It's from Sutta 29, in the Majjhima Nikaya. That unshakable deliverance of the heart, that indeed is the object of the holy life. That is its essence. That is its goal. Sometimes I get lost on this path. There are so many lists and so many possible ways to respond. And there are so many worldly distractions as well. It seems to me there are lots of opportunities still to fall off the ox. And as Sue showed us last week, we still seek insight about dukkha on three levels: reflection, investigation through our own direct experience, and finally, penetration to the level of knowing and wisdom. we still ask questions. What is going on right now? What is this? What is my most believed thought about this? Can I let this experience just be to help us work with this investigation and goal of understanding our experience and our suffering, as Suze pointed out last week? We can also, I'm saying in this picture, reflect on where we're headed. Where does our liberation lie? Do we already have some sense of it available to us right now? And we need to look for that too. When I read the sutta above the sink, I had not experienced the unshakable deliverance of my heart, but my heart responded to the idea of that possibility. I had a felt sense of my heart and its aspiration to be unshakably delivered. If we have faith in where we are going, it's easier to let go. And this picture seems to be saying we have to let go. We have to surrender. We can't keep trying to control and following our own our old habits. And if we let go, we will be okay. I'll close with two quotes. One is from Jack Kornfield. He says, "Everything that appears is singing a song, which is a song of emptiness and fullness. We experience the world of phenomena and consciousness, of light and dark, playing themselves out in a dance without separation." And the second one is by Kalu Rinpoche. The pure nature of mind, emptiness, lucidity, intelligence without limit has always been inside us. So riding the ox home, what is the wisdom of the picture and verse for you today? What overall feeling do you get from the picture and verse? What words or elements in the picture strike you? Do the picture and verse recall any experiences you had? Or do they arouse any aspirations you have? And what questions guide you forward? So we can do breakout groups now, and you can talk about these things with others. Welcome back, everyone. So who would like to share something that you came up for you in your group, or something you just wanted to share? Anyway, we'd like to hear from you. Get a little cross-pollination.
I'd like to say one thing, Lauren. I appreciate you had a couple of quotes during your talk that I really liked. I wish I would remember them exactly, but I've heard it before. T.S. Eliot.
Yeah.
Turning to the place for the first time. It's kind of fun hearing literary people who are not, you know, necessarily Buddhist, but they have these perspectives which are so aligned to, you know, the practice that we're doing. So I appreciate that one. I also appreciate it. I wish I could remember it all, but you're talking about dependent origination and Eckhart Tolle, you know, talking about our seeing ourselves as a focal point from where the universe manifests. What a rich notion.
Exactly. I like to just float it out there and think, you know, yeah. I think it's true, but as I said, I haven't experienced it. Thanks, Jerry. Did you want to say anything else?
No, I see Lillian and yeah.
So Lillian or Nikhil, unmute yourself if you can.
I think you can just start.
I think in our group there were a couple interesting things that came up to me. I think one was this comparison that someone made between mastery of other things in our life that we all have done, whether it's something we do as a hobby or for a job or something, and mastery of the mind, and how that makes it feel less of something that's not something that we can accomplish, but kind of ties it towards a more tangible thing that we can do to social media and other kind of facets of our lives. So I thought that was a really interesting and useful comparison. And I think the other interesting thing that came up in our conversation was, what does the flute mean and what is kind of the music, what's the role of the music? And I think there was some conversation for us about, is that just the kind of the community or the conversations that we have in these kind of these settings, kind of sharing the insights that we all have with the Dhamma talks, and just these social interactions that kind of help progress us along this kind of path.
Yeah, thank you, Nikhil. I think the flute and the music, and I was thinking, I don't play an instrument and I don't know that much about music, and I've been curious what someone who has music as more of their, you know, really important in their lives. I wondered how they responded to that. But it's interesting that you were saying it had, in your group, you felt that it was connected to like sharing what your insights are. Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's just like the community and the sharing of,
because it's expression. Like that, I guess. Yeah. Very interesting. I just think it's wonderful how people have all these different ways to add to the meaning, and there's no one right answer, but it can just add to what we're understanding. Thank you. Judith, did you want to say something else? No. Okay. Judith?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I do play music. I played music all my life, and I immediately went to the flute as well. And I was thinking about artistic expression in general and why he's playing the flute, and that artistic expression is a real combination of effort, because it takes practice, it takes technique, it takes effort. But at the same time, when it's really flowing, it's totally easeful, and it's like you've just opened a door and something's coming through you. But without the technique and the practice, that doesn't happen. So anyway, that was my reaction, other than also being a little bit hung up on how he could be beating his hands and playing the flute at the same time.
Oh, right. See, I didn't catch the death detail. But I'm glad you talked about the practice part of it, and the, you know, developing the mastery, which was in the previous picture, and then with the easefulness. Mm-hmm. I think that's helpful. So, anyone else want to have any words or want to share from their group? Because Charlotte, good. Because I was going to share from our group if you didn't.
Oh, I'd like you to share too. Patience came up in our group, and that was really valuable for me, to let things unfold as they will and not try to push them in one direction or another. And so that's what I came away from the group. Thank you.
Thank you, Charlotte. We have maybe one more minute if someone would like to share anything. I think I'll just share quickly in our group, because we had a really great expression and people talked a lot about the Sangha element of this picture, the last line, the last line, whoever hears this melody will join me, and how important the Sangha is in our path and how it helps us with trust or confidence, faith, and just very necessary, that connection. So I will just share that. The person said, and the trust it takes to keep coming back. So you fall off, you get back on. You fall off, you get back on. Anyway, thank you everybody for being here today and sharing. And now I'll turn it over to Jerry.
Good to see you all, and I wish you well. And why don't we allow this active, interactive energy to settle down and, close this with just being still again. Allow a settling of energy. Connecting with this body, knowing where we are, recognizing mental activity or atmosphere of our minds. We're practicing for ourselves and others. There's lots of difficulties in the world these days. Hopefully this is a practice, is something that can contribute to peace and harmony. So may the benefits of this practice be of benefit to ourselves and others. And may we all live in peace. Thank you for gathering this morning. Looking forward to seeing you all next time.